This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. The British have a new reality TV show that's part Survivor, part Fear Factor, with a generous helping of Abu Ghraib. It's called The Guantanamo Guidebook. Seven people volunteered to be treated like terrorism suspects. They were subjected to sleep deprivation, sexual humiliation, and intense interrogations. The producers used former American Delta Force interrogators to try to recreate the conditions real prisoners face in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Chris Gelf was one of the volunteers. He's a 22-year-old student at Oxford University, and I asked him why he wanted to be on the show.
I'm a politics student. I'm also a dual citizen. I'm an American citizen, and I wanted to know what actions are done in my name to keep me safe. And I really wanted to know what the genuine cost of that is. I think it's too easy to take things at face value and have someone say, this is keeping you safe, and you say, okay, I accept that. And I wanted to have a sort of visceral understanding of what that really meant.
Well, describe what happened. You're taken to a place that is supposed to be a lot like Guantanamo Bay.
Mm-hmm. What the production company did was one weekend we acted out a story that meshed quite closely to our real lives. So for me, they took my real life as a university student who studies Middle Eastern politics, and they said, let us imagine that you have raised money for a Palestinian aid charity and that you know that charity has fundamentalist links. So that's sort of the backstory that I had to conceal and that the interrogators had to discover. And then I'm taken to this warehouse, a big empty warehouse in North London, and essentially handed over to a team of interrogators who know nothing about me except, you know, they're given just me, my bag, and that's it, and they have to figure out what's going on. And so over the next up to 60 hours in that warehouse, they were allowed to do everything that the U.S. military is officially allowed to do to terror detainees in Cuba. So it was a sort of an alternating cycle of exercise, hazing, stress positions, and various other sort of techniques for shaking up suspects alternated with these interrogations.
So this show, it was not done for entertainment purposes, the way Fear Factor, for example, is in this country. This
was done absolutely not. No.
Right. This was done for to send a message.
Yeah, very much so. And the way the show was put together was to ensure that. I think you could have, if you really wanted to make entertainment out of it, you'd have picked people who are liable to flip out under pressure. And in fact, what the company did was they in picking the seven of us, they picked a good range of personality types. So I was the quote-unquote academic one. I was also the youngest, but we had a Muslim father of two who was 50. We had Britain's Thai kickboxing champion, Gary Turner. We had a very, very experienced fireman, the man who has a cool head in an emergency.
So describe to me, for example, a typical interrogation session and what happened to you.
At first, there weren't many interrogations because they tried to really strip away at your defenses. I mean, a lot of it is very dehumanizing so that you really want the whole process to end. So when I was first captured, I had a hood put over my head. In fact, we all did, had a hood put over our heads, headphones put over our ears so we couldn't hear anything, and an elbow-length gloves put on so we couldn't feel anything either. So there's sort of total sensory deprivation, and then we marched in a small room, which, counting footsteps, was 20 footsteps square. And after 4 hours, you start to go slightly catatonic. You do start to go into a kind of trance, and you can feel yourself starting to lose self-control. And so by the time you hit the interrogation, they then have a sort of a further range of tactics that they can use. And that's what was so striking for me. It was over 50 hours. They used a complete range of methods.
And did they break you?
Ultimately, they did. Being a, I suppose, slightly cocky philosophy student, I tried to talk my way out of it. I'd marked myself out from the beginning as uncooperative. And so to really break me down, they dragged me from my cell, stripped me naked in front of everyone, shackled me to a chair, shaved my head, and then when I didn't talk, carried me, four of these paratroopers up at shoulder height, into an unheated room where they put a cold fan to my back and left me listening to white noise rolled in a ball on the floor. And I don't know really how long I was there. It could have been an hour. It could have been 20 minutes. I really don't know. I'd not hit the physical end of my tether. I think I could have lasted more. But I think I hit a rational decision that to go on would have been sadism. And in a certain sense, that's the most depressing realization of all, because I felt very guilty the moment I left the studio because I'd left four other prisoners in there to continue the exercise. but not for a moment did I feel regret. And that's a very depressing realization.
All of this that you've described, these are approved interrogation methods used by the U.S.?
Yes. We were in the exercise for up to 60 hours, but the truth is that after the first 12, they had the vast majority of all seven of the prisoners' stories figured out. And in fact, they later figured out about 80% of our stories down within the first 6 hours. And they'd managed to do it without permanently hurting us. What they did was degrading, and we could argue about whether it was barbaric or not. But the simple truth is, in our particular case, it seemed to work, and it seemed to work very, very quickly.
So would you call this torture?
It's a very difficult question. I would say that it was. The white noise, complete deprivation of food, water, and sleep. Well, they didn't deprive us of water, but you started to go out of your mind. I mean, I went trance-like almost to protect myself in a way. I mean, I suspect, because I walked back onto set 10 minutes after it was over, and none of it seemed real. And it's very strange how your body can kind of shut it off. But in that sense, I do think it's torture. It forces you into some other level. And the idea of doing that for a week, I find horrific.
But you knew that this would end after a period of time. Prisoners in Guantanamo and elsewhere, they don't know when the end is coming.
Do not. The only thing that really kept us going in this exercise was the knowledge that it was finite. And so in that sense, the most difficult things that they did to us was they distorted our sense of time. In the 3 or so days, we slept only 4 hours. They'd play birdsong in the mid-afternoon. They moved the Quran prayer times to different times of day to compress our sense of time. And at one stage, we all thought we were over halfway through the exercise, and there was a palpable kind of, we can do this feeling. And it wasn't until we realized that none of us were hungry that, in fact, we'd only been in there for 6 hours, or we were still on the first day. And that was absolutely crushing. And so the idea that you might be held there and you don't know when it will end must be the most dispiriting thing of all. Because why do we go on? I mean, you focus on the belief and the hope that at some stage you will get out. And unfortunately, the people in Cuba, I don't think, have any reason to be so optimistic. And that must be crushing.
Chris Gelf is a participant on the British television reality show, The Guantanamo Guidebook. And he joined us from Oxford, England, where he is a university student studying philosophy and politics. Thank you very much, Chris.
My pleasure.